Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Good morning to you. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation this week. That's right, they picked their vacation week well. Yes, it's the week before 4th of July weekend, so they've tacked on an extra couple days in the end. It's very smart. I get what they're doing. It's tactical. That's what it is. There's a difference between strategy and tactics. This is tactical. Strategy is dividing your vacation time up over a couple weeks over the course of the year. Tactical is picking those weeks very carefully and acting on them. It's pretty fantastic. I don't know how much people have had a chance to follow the nonsense going on in Elena Kagan's confirmation hearing, but I'd like to start off with a little bit of, a montage, shall we say. By the way, we are streaming live at HalSparks.com/Ustream. You can join in the chat there. And, of course, on Twitter, at HalSparks. You can kind of both join the chat there. And I will be enlisting a lot of your conversation over the course of this. But it should come as no surprise the Republicans are just blocking outright anyone Obama suggests. And, of course, they are clearly closet communist. They have an agenda that's out of the mainstream. They are the most liberal person ever suggested, even remotely allowed to be near the Supreme Court. All these things, all these cliches that they bring up every single time a Democrat brings somebody up, even as somebody is sort of centrist and smart as Elena Kagan. So let's play a little bit of what how they're reacting to her, and I want you to pay specific attention to the who they're deriding. And it's trying to attach her to. They're trying to say, you are a bad person because you like this person. Who is that person they're talking about? Let's play that.
You have talked about your judicial heroes. One, of course, is Justice Thurgood Marshall.
Ms. Kagan identified Thurgood Marshall as another of her legal heroes.
Ms. Kagan has associated herself with well-known activist judges. She clerked for Judge Mikva and Justice Marshall, each well-known activist.
Justice Marshall's judicial philosophy is not what I would consider to be mainstream. He might be the epitome of a results-oriented judge.
These judges really don't deny their activist ideas. They advocate it.
He considered himself a judicial activist and was unapologetic about it.
And they openly criticize the idea that a judge is merely a neutral umpire.
As he once explained, you do what you think is right and let the law catch up.
He described his judicial philosophy as, quote, do what you think is right and let the law catch up, close quote.
Ms. Kagan appears to enthusiastically embrace Justice Marshall's judicial philosophy, calling it, among other things, a thing of glory. She may be exactly the results-oriented justice President Obama is looking for.
All right. This is that, do what you think is right and wait for the law to catch up. Oh, that's that. Oh, Thurgood Marshall, you hippie, you tassel wearing, long haired, dope smoking. Oh yeah, do it. Sure, just do what feels good. That's what they're literally making it sound like. They're literally taking the idea that Thurgood Marshall saying that one day, women, minorities, will have the right to vote. They will have the right to everything that a white man has. This, you know, at the time when he was arguing, for things like Brown v. Education, or Brown v. Board of Education, he argued that case in front of the Supreme Court before he became a Supreme Court justice. They are making his ideal that one day everybody will wake up and realize that we're all human beings, and painting that as some sort of hippie feel good. Dope smoking nonsense. It's stunning to me that they're not only willing to do this, and I think quite frankly, they don't actually have much of a choice. They've painted themselves into a corner that is, with rollers, and they're staying there. They're just, I take that back. I take that comment back because I don't think they're painting themselves into a corner. I think they happily stand in the corner and hope that no one bothers them. And that if you step into the corner, they want to draw a paint line around them that says you can't enter. It's sort of their view of what America is, ultimately. But Thurgood Marshall, the first black man on the Supreme Court, they are going after him like he is William Ayers. I mean, this is the sort of PR slant they are taking on this. Who's this Thurgood Marshall person, and what kind of activist stuff did he have? Now, activist judge, this is the one thing that they throw around. Now, obviously, activist judge and Citizens United comes immediately to mind. Clearly, we have not only four of the most conservative judges that have ever been on the Supreme Court are serving actually presently on the Supreme Court now. And those guys have just a stunning disregard for normal constitutional issues. They just are pushing an agenda that they were hired and put on the board, on the Supreme Court, to do. There's no question. They get marching orders. That's how they get their part on there. When a Democrat recommends someone to the Supreme Court and nominates them, a lot of times we get, there's a big storm kind of on the left where, why don't we get a really liberal judge? Where's the leftist judge? Where's the... Well, the truth is, most people with a genuine sense of law and a respect for the Constitution come down on the left. It's kind of that idea of the facts have a liberal bias, that general idea. But when they put a conservative on, the conservative comes on, lies completely about what they're thinking, and then basically takes marching orders from the Cheney wing of the Republican Party. So what you have here is, and this is stunning, I want to be able to find this quote, is Jeff Sessions, who's the ranking Republican on the Judiciary Committee. The stuff that he has managed to say. Now, granted, this is a man who once said that when he was a district judge, that they were talking about a civil rights case, and he said if he had his choice, he wouldn't try any of them, meaning none of them would get any face time in front of the court. That the idea that you would have any kind of concept of redress in a civil rights arena. Is absurd to him. This is also a man who referred to a black person as boy at one point. He has a history of this, and this is, by the way, the guy that the Republicans shoved to the top of the line in helping pick Supreme Court justices. Now, keep in mind, and by the way, in the chat room, there's a great conversation going on, and Sonic Rover, who's with us, brought up that Jeff Sessions is bitter because he was way too much of a wingnut to get confirmed himself. Yeah, he never made it through that process even close, and so there might be a bit of sour grapes, but ultimately, let's not lose the fact that he would go up against anybody Obama produced, anybody that Clinton produced, anybody that a Democrat produced for a nomination for the Supreme Court. But in this case, specifically, I think the idea of a Hispanic woman last year and now another woman on the court is frightening to him and his ilk, and they hate that concept. And so there's a lot of tap dancing around what codes they would use, but it's amazing to me that in attacking Elena Kagan, who they're really going after is Thurgood Marshall, and they're basically, Orrin Hatch said he's not sure he would have voted to confirm Thurgood Marshall at this point. And Orrin Hatch presents himself as a Republican who's one of the good guys. And then here's Jeff Sessions essentially saying, the Civil Rights Act, again, in the kind of Rand Paul wing of, look, I should be able to, from my position of power, which I got through centuries, put my boot in your face and not allow you to advance. And if you can't get past that, it's just because you're weak. It's not because I and my buddies and cronies have set up the entire system against you for a long time. But this is permeate through their entire philosophy. This is why they don't believe in extending unemployment benefits. This is why they don't believe in gay rights. This is why they don't believe in minority rights. This is why when they want to talk immigration reform, they will never, ever, 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 ever bring up Canadians living in the States illegally or getting married just so they can live here. I mean, the number's minuscule comparatively, but the point is that what they mean is Hispanics, and what they mean is Spanish-speaking people. So we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We got a great show today, not the least of which, in the third hour today, live in studio, my dear friend and Emmy Award winner Rick Overton will be in here. A brilliantly funny guy and an idea man. And on the other side of the, obviously some of you may know that I work with a marijuana policy project on their celebrity board as a non-user who supports legalization and decriminalization. It's not that Rick comes down the other side of that. He's for it too. He's just happens to be a user, I think. So that'll be an interesting conversation at the very least. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'd love to hear from you guys, but we will continue talking about this. I want to read some quotes from Jeff Sessions when we come back. I can't believe they think it's okay and they're going to gain seats in the fall. The Democrats are upset enough not to go to the voting booth and get rid of people like this. That amazes me. Oh, I'm so grumpy that I'm getting 80% of the bill I want instead of 100%, so I'm not going at all. And I'm going to leave the Tea Party to pick more people like Jeff Sessions and Rand Paul to run things. But we'll get on to that. 1-800-STEP-12, I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephen the Mooks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's a beautiful miracle of nature.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Sparks filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation, firing it up. That's right. We look like level society. That's the good stuff. I want to go to Joe in Spokane, Washington. Joe, you there?
Hello.
How are you? Morning.
I'm good. I was just, when you're in a closed circle and with like-minded people, you think that that's the norm. And I'm just wondering about some of these comments that McChrystal and his aides made, if they were listening to too much Armed Forces Radio, because all they get is Rush and Savage and that bunch.
Right. I don't think he listens to anybody like that. I think a lot of that just comes from his natural egotism. I think in a lot of ways, you know, Stanley McChrystal turned out to be the David Lee Roth of war generals, because he just believes his own hype almost to a charming extent. You know what I mean? These guys, this is a guy who thinks he's bulletproof. This was one of the problems, I think. And one of the, if you look at psychologically, how this keeps coming up with this guy in particular, is that he thinks the rules don't apply to him. When you're trying to implement a strategy, and you're putting a war plan into place, and you have a guy who basically thinks he's bulletproof, there's going to be less of an empathy for what the soldiers are going through genuinely, because his answer was to go down and walk point with them, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, I think that it's a different side of things. I don't think he was coming from a political stance. I think this is a social issue with him, a personal issue with him, and his own beliefs about his importance in the theater and his importance in the scheme of things. And I think, quite frankly, there's all that debate about whether or not he intended this and wanted to pull the plug and get out of there, knowing full well they wouldn't court-martial him, but knew that they would pull him. So, because things are going to be rough for a long time, and the coin strategy is harder to implement than they thought, and he doesn't want it going bad on his watch. So better to get dismissed for being a smartass and then becoming a hero of the lecture circuit for a while than to actually stand to this.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking that because, you know, like my grandson came back from Iraq, and he's a big Glenn Beck fan and all that kind of stuff, and it's like, well, what do you know about what everybody else is saying?
And, right.
and And he's, well, just what I hear on the radio.
Right. Yeah, you that know? You know, it's nice that they added Ed Schultz for a time.
Yeah.
And that was pretty reassuring. There's clearly no parity there, and it's interesting because I've got a bunch of other calls, so I want to move on. But I thank you for the point. There's a there's no balance in radio in this country. Clearly, there's a huge conservative slant. I mean, it's literally 95-5, and in this case, you have you know, people with Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly, and they're all on Armed Forces Radio. And then there's, you know, they try to put one progressive voice on there, which is Ed Schultz. And I don't know if he's still on, actually. But that by no means creates this balance. And when you're talking about airwaves and you're talking about, you know, if you're on cable, I kind of can't care because, quite frankly, if you're on cable, you're allowed to do whatever you want. But if you're on the airwaves, you rent those from the American public. And in this case, you're sending a message to our soldiers. That should be the, you know, there should be parity and balance in that in particular. Let's go to Chad in Idaho. Chad, you there?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that nobody's talking about the Republicans. They're purposely tanking the economy by voting against unemployment extension and state stabilization.
Right. Well, you mean George Will was even, you know, who's kind of championing this idea. George Will was on saying that unemployment benefits don't simulate the economy ever, even though they're the only thing that's ever shown to and is extra spending. That's the only thing that's ever been shown to pull out of a situation like this.
Well, if I could say that if Harry Reid's not going to fight and keep him in session and pull the cots out, then why should I fight for Harry Reid or the Democrats? I mean, come on. Make them filibuster it. Make them read the phone book.
Well, I'm a big fan of them following through on the filibuster, but ultimately they have other bills that they need to get through, and a lot of times that's why this is going on, because we literally have the stuff regarding the Gulf Coast, all this paperwork and all this kind of, like, these small acts that have to be put through for Gulf Coast relief. And if they just keep hammering this bill, for example, and they do make good on it, the rest of the work shuts down. I get, believe me, my inclination would be to do just what you're saying, but I also understand the practicalities of, you know, several big issues going on at the time, there's a little bit of question to me that, you know, are they trying to make sure that people are aware of that of what the Republicans are made of going into this election? I think this is a tough test to put it on, but quite frankly, they just don't have the votes.
So why is the messaging so bad for the Democrats? Why can't they have any message at all?
You know, I coming out of the Democrats, coming out of actually, you know, if you listen to Pelosi's speeches and you listen to what the statements that Harry Reid makes, most of the time, Reid is softer on me. You're not going to get much defensive Reid from me. But the House Democrats and a good portion of the Senate Democrats really do, you know, shape the message well. But by the time it makes it down through this haze of deficit reduction, which is the big, Wall Street has a big love, let's just say, for this idea of deficit reduction and pushing this, because quite frankly, if we keep spending, if we extend unemployment benefits, if we keep spending and building infrastructure and stuff, this ultimately just benefits the middle class. And that's something they can't have. They can't have that toehold. So they really do give marching orders to almost across the spectrum to the media, and it chips away at the message. And eventually, by the time it gets to us, is seemingly very watered down. You take a decent statement by Nancy Pelosi, and then by the time it gets to you, it's a half of a soundbite, not even the whole thing.
Do you think they can retain the House and the Senate?
I do. I think they will, actually. Because they need the Republicans need 39 seats. My guess is 34. That's between now and then, you're going to see a lot of better messaging between when the White House comes to play, and when the Dems are really starting to move into campaign mode in a big way, because there's a lot to talk about. Thanks for the call, I appreciate it. We got to go take a break. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. It's just a fantastic, and we're streaming at halsparks.com/ustream. Come join us in the chat, won't you? And on Twitter at Al Sparks. right. I'm Hal Sparks filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. This is, let's see. We'll go to Mike in Madison. Here we go. Mike.
Good morning, Hal.
How are you?
I'm here. I'm disappointed. I mean, first of all, I got to listen to this right-wing rhetoric every day about the appointing a justice when you guys won your election. We put your corporate kangaroo guys on there. You're not even legal. And you're going to complain about a woman who obviously has had an educational career, who knows what she's doing, and we won the election.
Right.
Now I want to put it to you, does it matter if the Democrats hold power when they're not willing to use it?
Well, for the record, keep in mind, they are using it and have used it. She is going to get confirmed. They can take all these pot shots all they want. She's going to make it through. That's no question. There's no way they're going to talk her down any more than Sonia Sotomayor. The existence of a Democratic majority of any sort does not preclude the ability for Republicans to get on a microphone and say stupid things and ultimately affect elements. We have, for better or worse, a non-majority-based representative government at this point. The idea being that a simple majority is not enough to get a vote through. I disagree with that. I think it should be, but the workings of the Senate are pretty complicated in that regard, and it gets frustrating. Again, the answer then is not fewer Dems in this case. If somebody comes to you and goes, "Look, I've got 50, I need 55 to get this done," then your answer should be, "Then let's make 60 happen." Then I don't want to hear any excuses. What happens though with the case is we ended up with 58 essentially, with the illusion of 60. Because, you know, we had Joe Lieberman and in that, and Ben Nelson, whom I think, you know, anytime, you know, you've got a Dem with that much, you know, that kind of backing, I don't think they qualify. But let's say we've got 59 and we need 60 to break a filibuster, and they can literally filibuster everything. It's not even that they could filibuster the law itself. This is a sort of a common misconception that we have about this, that like Mr. Smith goes to Washington, they'll go in and they'll have to filibuster this particular law, and they'll just have to go down swinging, and we'll make them stand there all day fighting this law. It's not. They can also, by invoking the filibuster, they can also just offer endless amendments and try to chip away at it so that it never gets a vote post-filibuster, pre-filibuster. So the problem is they end up having to play nice no matter what. Now, this worked in the Democrats' benefit when we were in the minority to some degree. Not as much as I would have liked, but it certainly was there. And what they, why they call it the, you know, this, you know, the nuclear option is because it shatters the entire, the comedy of the Senate. So nobody's playing fair anymore and all the bills go out the window. Already it's hard. I mean, you look at the backup from the House to the Senate and what bills can get through and the process they have to go through to get actually a vote. And it's not like just, oh, here's the bill, let's rubber stamp it through there. They have to go through their committees equally. If once you start down the road where they don't do it, and this is, I'm explaining to you their kind of fear about this, and when you don't have 62 votes, when you don't have a hard line of, okay, I know I can beat any filibuster that comes along, they can just jack up every bill from now until doomsday. And the truth is, this Republican majority, if this was an issue in 1987, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But this Republican class, this group of GOP people will do that. They are running on 100% obstruction. And the reason they are doing it is because it gives them two things. One, it makes them look like a cop. It allows them the ability to say, I know what's going on here, and I'm just saying no to bad things. And it keeps them from having to present ideas and govern themselves. They don't have to produce anything because they're standing there, you know, I'm just stopping the bad stuff. So I don't have to solve crimes. I just have to be the cop on the beat is their idea. And
is there any way to jam any of this through reconciliation? I mean, Bush got everything he wanted. Why didn't we stop him?
Well, a lot of what he wanted was war based, and everybody and the public was largely behind it as well. There was a clarity of purpose. Even, you know, that was the issue. You know, look at Iraq and Afghanistan and stuff. You know, when Glenn Beck talks about the 9/12 movement, you know, this nonsense he always brings up. Well, let's get back to where we were on 9/12. You know where we were on 9/12? We were panicked. We were xenophobic, and we would have nuked any country that we found out housed these people. Like, we wanted you. I mean, you saw people all over the place veering into the left going, hey, man, if we got to open up nuclear weapons, this might be an option right now because of this. You know what I mean? That's where we were 9/12. That's where these guys are 24/7. So yes, there is some things we can get through in reconciliation, but they all have to be budget based. They all have to deal directly with the budget, which is why the Dems have been great this year in putting stuff into the defense appropriations bill and into the budget to get stuff moved through. And the Republicans threatened to filibuster that and withdrew their filibuster because of defense spending and all those kind of things. And at the same time, as much as, you know, we called their bluff and they fell on that particular, on a couple of different issues. And part of Obama's agenda about improving gay rights has been a trickle, pattern, which is we'll add this part to this bill, and they'll never take that a whole bill down just to get rid of this one element. And so that they've been chipping away at it. It's been a very smart policy. Meanwhile, yesterday, the Republicans, the Democrats denied Afghan reconstruction war funding until there was a guarantee that the corruption would stop. And that takes guts for them to sit there and go, we're not sending $3.9 billion to Afghanistan until we're sure that some of this corruption is handled. That doesn't get a lot of play in the press. You know what I mean? You don't see that the Democrats are going, wait a minute, I've got the guts to not fund some element of the war, because it needs to be handled better. This is American money. And even Nancy Pelosi yesterday was saying, this is huge amounts of money, and people are just, gambling with it. They're throwing it into this arena and hoping that it ends up where it's supposed to go, and that's not good enough for us.
And I suppose the Republicans will spin it as, the Democrats don't want to support the
precisely. Precisely.
And, it just keeps going.
Right. Well, you've got to understand, their message is not going to change. So you just have to shoulder it eventually. The question is, how much leeway do we give it as Democrats and as liberals and progressives who really want to see these changes we want? Do we back down going into this election and harumph because Obama's only pushed through in his first 18 months in office 85% of his campaign promises? 85% of them. If you go through the hit list of what he's managed to accomplish, including health care reform, by the way, which by the fall, people are going to freak out if they ever try to take back some of the stuff that he managed to get in there. No president since Medicaid was put in place has been able to put any of this stuff through. No consumer protections, none of that. And Obama made it a priority, and as tough as it was, and he took political hits for it, and it actually went through. And we have, I have my issues with the bill. It is by no means perfect. That's not the point. We often get on the left, we're fine with, perfect being the enemy of the good.
I agree. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for the call. This is kind of on the other side of things. Let me go to how much time we got before we get. We're doing all right. Yeah, we got a couple minutes. Okay, David. Whoops. Oh, that's not David in San Francisco. Let's see. Trump. I'm learning the phones. It's a good time. Joe in Indiana.
Yeah, Hal, how you doing? You got a great show here. I think you should consider a career change.
Thanks, brother. I'll take that as a compliment.
I hear you apologizing for Obama day after day. I'm kind of getting sick of it. I think that you're being way too soft on him. I expected a lot less war. He's too much Bush-like. I don't think he's backed off on, God, are they still torturing people? Are they still tapping the phones? We're still going war, kill, kill, kill. Come on. That's not what it's about. He ran on. I thought this guy was a peaceful guy.
Well, withdrawal being what it is, and have you ever heard anybody along the way say we're not listening to the generals on the ground and the actual stuff? I'm not a fan of this.
He gave the order, get over there, now he gives your order, get your butt home. That's it.
Well, that's essentially, right,
but... He calls it.
Right, that's true. However, in the pulling out, for example, we've drawn out of Iraq, and that was right in line with his campaign promises. That started last summer, and people have completely, that's completely off the radar. And that's because it was implemented and done. Afghanistan is a lot thicker because of the Pashtun region in the northern part of Pakistan, where the real, Al Qaeda being 50 to 100 people. And your phone's a little dirty, so I'm going to address this off the air. Hopefully, I'll get to your point. The Pashtun region in the northern part of Pakistan is the dangerous area. In working with the Pakistani government and trying to support them at one point last year, they were in danger of becoming a failed government. You don't hear that anymore. That's largely because of this administration and the State Department. A lot of times, I think, people get very frustrated once stuff goes off, you know, is actually handled by the stuff, focusing on the stuff that isn't too much, and not having a practical view of what it actually would be required to make this happen. Now, I'm not a fan of the Afghan war, but I do get that if you race out of there, you create a vacuum and they rush right back in. And I also think that's exactly what Obama is hearing from the military leaders, both on the ground and in the Pentagon, day after day after day after day after day. And so I give him a little bit of leeway in that area. And he and Biden have said that, you know, July of 2011, we will be significantly reduced, if not out of there. That drawdown happens now. Part of his problem with McChrystal, the reason McChrystal said a lot of those things was because of Obama implementing this strategy to get us out of there. The Pentagon is not a fan of ever leaving any kind of war arena. This is where they get to go play in the sand. And they're never going to support the idea of us drawing a military exercise to a close, ever. And there's two ways they're going to oppose it. One is they're going to go, a dangerous region, and if we ever get out of there, it will collapse and turn into a bigger threat. And then the other way is, this is a staging area for other conflicts that we may have to deal with. So, Mr. President, we're looking at Iran, and we're looking at parts of the Middle East, and we're looking at Russia and China and their movements, and this is one of our places where we need to set up shop. And we all have this idea that once we get in there, we would just immediately kind of go the hell with you guys and pull out or whatever. But then a certain amount of evidence shows up and you're like, okay, I will mitigate this, but I still believe in my philosophy and I'm still going to push it through. And that's what I think you have is with the case with Obama. I'm not apologizing for this part of it, but I am being practical about this. And I think our lack of practicality on the progressive side has put us in a position where, for example, we have a 5-4 situation in the Supreme Court. We back down when we don't get 100% of what we want. The Republicans set an agenda that's 10, 15 years long, look at the long game, and decide we'll take these hits to eventually plant seeds that will eliminate the rights of gay people and women and minorities and deny food for children and unemployment benefits in the worst recession in the world. These are tactical choices that they are making, you know, for a long-term strategy. We have to be willing to do the same. I'm not saying when you have a problem, don't complain about it. And I'm certainly not saying that there aren't elements of the administration that we shouldn't all complain about quite loudly. But I'm also saying I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I'm not going into the elections going, I didn't get everything I wanted this time around, or it's not the Iraq war we pulled out, but the Afghanistan conflict is not going away as fast as I would like it to. So therefore, I'm not voting for my local, you know, Indiana congressperson because of my hatred for the policies of the Bush administration that the Obama administration is stuck with for a time as they phase out. We're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this with more of your calls. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while we're away on vacation. Thank you guys for an amazing conversation, by the way, today, and we'll have more of it right after this.
Have no fear. Steffi's here. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. Clearly, you can tell from the conversation that we're having and the music that's playing in the bumper that I will be here all week. tomorrow will be officially Hump Days with Hal. Simply Hump Days with Hal. Yeah, which will be great. Later on in the show, next hour, we have the lovely, the talented Rick Overton, who will be joining us for the third hour, and Christine Romans, who will be on the phone with me at the top of the third hour. that I was talking to Tony during the break. We were having a lovely conversation because the if you come to ustream.tv/channel/HowlSparks Live or go to howlsparks.com/ustream, you can actually join in this conversation, which continues during the breaks rather ferociously. And I was kind of making the case that the Iraq drawdown was impossible this time last year, and it was not going to happen, and Obama was failing us miserably because he wasn't doing this. And then Dan Rather starts reporting that there are airplanes flying gear out of Iraq in huge droves. I mean, there are convoys set up getting the heck out of Dodge. And then Afghanistan being, in a lot of people's minds initially, the good war being that, okay, this is where the people were who attacked us. Iraq had nothing to do with it at all. But in the northern region of Pakistan, the southern part of Afghanistan, this is where, using a combination of drugs and gold in the hills, the Al-Qaeda has the ability to attack and reform and do all these kind of things. And this is something we have to fight. And CIA Director Leon Panetta comes in and says, there's 50 to 100 Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. And which means we have about 1,000 soldiers. It's 1,000 to 1 soldier versus Al Qaeda member. Now that doesn't take into account Afghanistan and Afghanistan's Taliban, and the fact that if the Taliban is in charge there, they're much more friendly to Al Qaeda. It creates a vacuum, and they're allowed to come back in. The issue now is, how do we hold that area and clean up Pakistan, make sure that Pakistan's nukes don't fall into their hands? Because quite frankly, getting a bomb over here is very difficult. More than likely, if they ended up with a Pakistani bomb, it would end up in some place like Bali or Madrid or places that have already been attacked that have a much looser security net than we have, and are quite frankly closer, where the things can be brought across ground instead of by boat and by plane, which is where you start getting a little more difficult. The complication of Afghanistan is an ugly, ugly thing, and it's something that I think while we have to be, obviously there's been this back and forth again about Obama wanted setting a timeline, of Biden saying July 2011, the Dems in the House being 100% behind that. And then, every Republican that goes on the air saying there's no timeline, and quite frankly, we side with the generals who, a bunch of them, would prefer this go on for 20 years. I mean, they're looking for a Japanese-style occupation of stuff. Look at that. That's fun. So that means that it's time to take a call, because we've got some people waiting on the line. David in San Francisco.
Hey, how do you help? Hey, this whole Supreme Court business where they're ranting and raving about the guns and where inevitably this is going to lead to the where Kagan stands on guns. And to me, if I was a senator and I was asking questions and that the whole world could hear, I'd be asking what the Supreme Court could be doing to guarantee that America gets its money back for BP's disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. And so if you were to look at the very people who are asking these gun questions, where they stand on apologizing to BP, you'd find that they didn't have a leg to stand on.
Right. They wouldn't be able to bring this up at all.
Exactly.
You're never going to hear a question about the limitations of corporate power from the Republicans ever. It's very sad when we occasionally hear it from a Blue Dog Dem, and it's almost shocking, but you will never, ever hear it from a member of the GOP.
Well, right, and that's why they've got to come up with some kind of a question or, waste America's time with their lame questions about issues that... the pen is mightier than the sword, and you can usually prevent wars if you've got honest district attorneys and honest courts, and you only need guns when you have dishonest courts and dishonest prosecuting attorneys.
Right. Well, that's what, largely our judicial system was put in place to eliminate the need for us to all be packing heat all the time. The idea that somehow we as a society say, okay, the safety orderly elements of society are important to us all in general, for business, for private individuals, for large corporations. Everybody needs the ability to find redress without having to walk out into a town square and have a shootout with a guy in a big black hat. And so we set this thing up so we wouldn't have to deal with that part of it. The Republicans seem to want to go back to the other side because it was much easier to establish in a survival of the fittest on a physical level their idea that they would somehow win. The ironic part is that they very seldom do. that it even hurts them. They vote against their own self-interest and the self-interest of their own constituents.
Yeah, you wonder how Governor, of Mississippi is going to get out of this one. He must have been taking bribes for the last 60 days, and now when the shore is finally coated, when the shore is finally coated, he's got a little splaining to do.
Absolutely. Thank you for the call. It's an excellent point. Yeah, cheers. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. Coming up next hour, Charlie Pierce is going to be joining us. And the following hour, Christine Romans and Rick Overton. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks. It's 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Good morning and welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We are covering the gamut of things. No, people in the chat, don't tell me it now. They think I should be doing the ad now. Yeah, I have to do some of the business that Steph does when she's doing, you know, the show. And today it's an ad for Safe Light Auto Glass, and I'm supposed to do it, but I'm not supposed to do it till the end of the first break. So hang out. They're very good. They're very good at helping me with this part of the radio part that I'm not down when we were doing P90X and all those kind of things, and I had to do those at the top of the hour. The chat room would just P90X, 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 you know, or Carbonite. That was the big one. Everybody's reminding me, do Carbonite. You got to do Carbonite. Remember Carbonite? I'm not supposed to do it yet, not for another 45 minutes. Don't forget Carbonite. So thank you. Calm down. Remind me then. All right. And don't – oh, Sue Scott just said Carbonite. Stop it. All right. And you can join us in the chat, by the way, ustream.tv/channel/HalSparksLive. Or you go to halsparks.com/ustream. I want to go to Sabrina. I want to talk a little bit more about Afghanistan. Sabrina, you there?
Yes, I am. You're doing a good job there, Hal.
I do what I can.
I guess I'm a little confused when I hear people say that they're disappointed about how the president is handling the war. I mean, I guess when I listened to him campaign, he never said anything about leaving Afghanistan. In fact, he was saying that this was the just war. So when I hear people complaining about him not pulling out or drawing down, I guess I'm like, well, did you hear him during the campaign?
Right. Well, and also, he's established a line. You know, Iraq was the first line of business, and that has been going according to plan. So much so that, have you heard anything about it lately?
No, you haven't.
Because it's being taken care of in a way with a level of deference and work that was not seen in the last 8 years under Bush at all. They treated Iraq. Like a playground, essentially, for their policies.
Right.
Now, Obama said July 2011, that's when we're getting out of Afghanistan. We want to be out of there by then. Biden is backing this using a variation of the COIN strategy, the counterinsurgency strategy, that's more take command of certain areas and move forward. It's a variation on, by the way, that they made fun of him for on the campaign trail when Biden was running for president and is now part of the implemented process.
I know, that's what you brought my next point. Thank you for taking away my point there.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That was it. I just thought that I was a little disappointed when I hear people saying that they're surprised by his action, but that's what he campaigned on. So
exactly.
I don't understand.
Exactly. This is a lot of people, and I think, and I'll let you go because I have a bunch of other people in line.
Okay.
Thank you so much. A lot of people have what they want in their head because they voted for Obama sort of on the promise of things getting better. They think that the promises they made to themselves are actually what he promised on the campaign trail, and what he did say he's actually putting into place. Let's go to Stephanie and Madison because she wants to talk about one of my favorite people in the whole world. Hey, Stephanie.
Hey, Hal. Hey, I want to real quick say that I saw you on The View, and I thought you did a great job.
Oh, thanks. That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to get in a fight with one of the mean girls.
Elizabeth, there was never a point... There was never a point politically where she or Joe and I could have gotten into it because the subjects didn't come up, and I was very disappointed because I had all my I'm not gonna lie, I did manage to I did work up some retorts beforehand just in case because it's her show, and you know, and once you're on somebody else's turf, you're a little I tend to be a little more deferential.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but once the Judge Seidlin touched me, we were both strangers on that show, so I was able to just tell him not to touch me and don't talk to me.
That.
What a weirdo.
Yeah,
right.
I watched the whole thing. I thought you were great. Who else I think is great is Al Franken.
Amazing.
Yesterday when he spoke at the Roberts Court. I thought he did a great job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the guy is a policy wonk. He knows what he's talking about. He does his research.
I was just so proud. I'm so proud. So I'm going to call his office today and just make sure, you know, he's close enough to Wisconsin. I'll help him get in.
That's absolutely. You know, he's a neighbor.
Anyway, thanks, Hal.
Absolutely. Thanks, Stephanie. You know, one of the reasons why I, you know, when people go, why won't the Dems, how come the Dems can't do stuff? Why don't they get stuff? The reason that I don't let that kind of phrasing stand is because there are people like Al Franken who are really, really working hard and doing amazing stuff. And if you allow this meme of lesser of two evils and throw the baby out with the bathwater anti-incumbent fever to take seat, and then it attacks the wrong people, that's fine as long as you're aware of specifically who you're going against. Obama's not up for election this fall. If you want more of the progressive policies, then you have to pay attention to the local elections and the your congressperson and your senator who might be up this year. This is where you make your point and your case. Not voting for your congressperson or senator because you don't think Obama has done enough or you don't like the leadership of the Democratic Party is insanity. Especially if you happen to have a good senator or a good candidate running, of which there are a lot. So, that being said, I want to get to Daryl in Phoenix. Daryl, are you there?
How you doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm the one of the people that's affected by the unemployment extension.
Right.
And
or the lack thereof, right.
Yeah, the lack thereof. I was wondering, can Obama sign an executive order to approve the extension, or it just that they got to go through the process again?
It has to go through as a bill. Again, it's a budgetary element to some degree, but no, he can't do that. This is actually more based on what the House does.
Mm-hmm.
But the Senate has to kind of verify and create a more adult version of the bill in their way of thinking. So that's the unfortunate part of it is that, and by the way, this is a hard line in the sand that the Republicans are drawing. You literally have Republicans suggesting that anybody who's getting unemployment for more than two cycles, if you have to sign back up for it, anybody who's going in should get drug tested. So,
I heard about that.
Yeah, everybody. This is not a Democrat who's ever suggesting this kind of nonsense. This is a Republican thinking the idea that the reason people don't have jobs is not because it's the worst recession, possibly if you listen to Paul Krugman, dipping into a possible depression if we stop spending.
He said he suggests more government spending to get it. He said they're saying like he's another Herbert Hoover.
Absolutely. I mean, you literally had, Tom Hartman talks about this a little bit, but there were points where they were saying the one thing that kept us the depression from taking hold and doing it and going through the same cycle again was that they were literally creating government jobs where one guy would dig a hole and then another guy would be paid to fill it. And you know, literally just keep people working. The interesting thing enough, though, is that in modern times, we have enough infrastructure work that needs to be done that if we just implemented, we just decided, we need – and I don't know, what industry are you in, by the way? What work were you doing?
Well, I used to do customer service at the airlines.
Okay.
And they slacked a lot of jobs over the years.
Sure.
I've been out of work for 7 months now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I'm facing – I mean, this is not a bipartisan issue. This is a survival issue.
Oh, yeah?
I like to work. I've been working since I was 18.
Right.
You know, I've never been through this in my life. But I have another question.
Sure.
My question is This not 1.5 million people are Democrats that's unemployed. It's some Republicans as well.
Right.
I would want to know, why do they vote for politicians that don't have their best interests at heart?
Yeah.
I'm scratching my head every day figuring out if they brainwashed or they just loyalist. I don't know.
Well, I think it's a cultural and social thing, because they will vote against their own financial interests. And I mean, literally, let there be no mistake. The Bush administration crashed the economy. The only debate is whether they did it by accident and incompetence or on purpose. And I lean more towards the latter. I think they did it on purpose, because I think they saw that because of the war, it was a losing proposition. There was probably going to be a Dem in there. And the only way to stop them from implementing better and more permeate social programs and creating a real safety net for the people of this country and treating all Americans like Americans instead of invaders, like the poor come over from another country or something, and not that they're actual human beings that lived here or born here. They knew this was kind of going in. They literally crashed this. But you have a group of people who will look past that for the idea that somehow they can legislate gay people out of existence, or that they can force women to get out of the job market and go back to the home. That unemployment, part of the problem is there's too many women working and they're taking all the men jobs. I mean, this is literally how they're thinking. And when you have that kind of thought, you don't vote based on logic.
Yes.
You vote based on a xenophobia and a level of madness. I have to take a break, and I hope things look up for you.
Well, I'm still trying. I'm not a quitter. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely, man. You have no reason to celebrate quitters' holiday this weekend, which is Sarah Palin, the 1-year anniversary of her no longer being the Alaska governor. I would say, if I were you, run for office. Make a point. I mean, I'm serious. School board. Those kind of, like, start on the ground and start really thinking about that as a potential. Because if you're in customer service, you're used to helping people get what they want and what they need.
Yes.
And that's not a bad person to have in politics. So, I'm going to put that bug in your ear and you can play around with it, whatever. But either way, I wish you luck. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Oh, yeah. Look at this. The chat room was helping me out here. Do I have to sing the jingle? Do I have to go, Safe Light Repairs, Life Repairs? Safe Light Auto Glass. Windshield chipped or cracked? Call Safe Light Auto Glass at 1-800-800-2727 or go to safelight.com, because that little chip can turn into a major explosion of glass if you hit another bump. Take care of it while they still can. They can just, they put a little suction cup on there, pull on it, whatever they do. It's amazing. They can go right to your house. See, they thought they were getting a 5-second billboard, and I did a whole ad. How do you like that? Thanks, chat room at HughesStream. And by the way, you can watch us live on camera. You can see the lovely and talented Tony, Board Op Tony, with us today. We'll have Miranda Cam at some point during the week. We'll make that happen. And you'll, of course, get to see. We'll cut back. I got to take a break. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks filling in. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
You'll cheer, you'll cry, you might even get a cheap laugh or two.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Step 12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show. They are away on vacation all this week. We got a couple more calls, and I want to get to them really quickly because we don't have a lot of time in this. Alpha, are you there?
Yes, Hal. Look, once every month, once every 2 months, you see Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid stick their head up out of the sand and say something. Neither one of them are great orators. However, carrying a message is the biggest problem that the Democrats have. There's a lack of surrogates, and there seems to be an unwillingness for the Democrats to speak up. I mean, you've got some who do come to the cameras, but on a daily basis, they are outgunned. The Republicans outgun us.
There's
with
no
surrogates.
Question. Yeah, there's no question that the Republicans have a better handle on media than the Dems do. There also should be a lot of clarity in the fact that Republican policies fit very well into very narrow phraseology. They fit really well into sound bites because there's not much depth to them at all. But there's no further conversation.
But that's why it should be very easy to vilify them. And you see, with the minority that they have now, the smallest minority, they are able and have been successful in shutting this government down. So why couldn't the Democrats
keep
Bush down?
I hear you. But there's been a ton of stuff that has gotten through, and it just doesn't get the play. Part of my problem with the Dems and their issue with you know, media and visibility is that there's a lot of laws and rules that have and executive orders the president has put through, shifts in policy that are more or less permanent because of this president, that they don't tend to just kind of beat their chest. Now, they may be saving that till close to the election cycle because the American public has a notoriously short attention span on these kind of things. But they're all doing – but the president, there's a presidential daily brief every single day. There's a the Democrats, especially Nancy Pelosi, are much better than I think Harry Reid at making – the House Dems are at making their case and making the visible march towards what they want to have happen. That's why, quite frankly, when Harry Reid started getting in trouble in Nevada, I don't think a lot of people were coming to his aid in that regard. Now, he's running up against a Tea Partier, and she's bananas, so he's going to win, and he'll probably retain his seat. But they were talking about Schumer and somebody else maybe moving in, taking over his position as leader of the Dems in the House. And a lot of us, quite frankly, are pretty comfortable with that idea. That being said, you do have a lot of Dems who are making a lot of headway and doing a lot of work, and I think we have to watch our language as Dems to not believe the hype that nothing is getting done and that the government is shut down and that things aren't getting through. Now, granted, the unemployment benefits, the Republicans drew a strong line in the sand and they stopped it because they can, because of the nature of this particular law and how it goes through, but we managed to get some stuff through in the Defense Appropriations Bill. We managed to get what looks like it will be two Supreme Court justices in pretty quick amount of time on the Supreme Court. Things are happening. We need to go, okay, this is the problem I have. This is the law that matters to me, and I want to make sure why this isn't getting through, as opposed to broad language like everything is falling apart. There's nothing going on. The Republicans get everything we want, and the Democrats don't get anything they want. It's just not the fact. And I think that's part of the Republican strategy.
But it's about perception. It's all
exactly
about perception. You're absolutely right. Thank you, Al.
Absolutely. And let me go to how much time do we have, Tony? I want to make sure I can get the a little, yeah, okay, cool, excellent. Mary in Long Island.
Hi, Hal. It's so good to talk to you. Back in the early days of the Bush administration, before the Iraq invasion, Ron Suskind did an interview with a Bush administration official. I forget who it was. It might have been Card. And remember they talked about this in Vanity Fair about how the Republicans create their own reality.
Right.
They said, he looked at Ron and says, look, you're a member of the reality-based community as a journalist. Here, we create our own reality.
Right.
Hal, this is one of the most important things that has been said in the last decade. People don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
It accounts for a lot of the weirdness and people saying, well, how can you talk against Thurgood Marshall? I mean, what is their strategy? What is the point? It's a dog whistle.
Yeah.
They don't care about reality. That's what, and
they define their reality because, and quite frankly, this is where we have a little bit of a responsibility as an electorate and as human beings to be able to listen to this stuff and not go, oh my God, they're winning. They're saying these things and they must be true. There's an element of freak out that comes.
Yes.
You know, Sonia Sotomayor is a Supreme Court justice today.
Yes.
If you looked at the freak out on the left of her, you know, during the her confirmation process, you would think that the fact that the Republicans were allowed to speak on the Judiciary Committee is a failure of Obama's leadership, that they were able to speak out loud. Secondly, that the things that they said actually had any weight whatsoever. They need to be.
I hear you. Are so right.
Yeah.
You cannot allow the white noise from the right to bleed over to the left.
And start dictating how you perceive your own representation.
Right. You're right. We need to get more Dems. You know, I don't even hear this.
No.
Except from you. This
right.
is the truth. I said, what is it? Roosevelt had a huge Democratic majority.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. One of those great, you know, and of course he's able to get things through. Let them challenge it in court. I mean, you know,
right.
like for example, the health care law.
Right.
They have no. They,
nope. Never. They're never going to rescind it. Nope.
They must think that Dems are stupid. You think this?
Well, a good portion. Yeah. A good portion of. Yeah.
That the president is a constitutional law expert. Nobody ever talks about this on
right.
anybody. Why not? I mean, what? He's not Bush. He's obviously not Bush.
Right. Well, that's
I
it.
Don't get.
They're going to define. They're going to define this because a lot of people, quite frankly, take the last thing that they heard and define their existence on that. When you're
mm-hmm.
when you're progressive and you're a Democrat and you go, there's a section of the Democrats that I don't like. There's the
mm-hmm.
Ben Nelsons and the Mary Landrews and,
mm-hmm.
and the type the Blue Dog Democrats who
right.
might as well be soft Republicans. The answer
right.
to winning in that situation and going, I want what I want and I know it's right, is not to go, well, the hell with the Dems because of
exactly.
10 of them. Because you forget about all the ones like mm-hmm.
Al Franken
who are doing amazing work.
Amazing work.
It kills me that some...
White House.
Right.
I mean, we have a lot of strong
right.
people.
I have to take a break.
Thank you for being there. You're great.
Absolutely.
Have your own show. I love you.
Thanks, Mary. We'll deal with this a little bit more after coming back from the break. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. When we come back after this break, we will have Charlie Pierce. I'm Pal Sparks filling in on The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. And on the line right now, I'm lucky to have from the nation, Charlie Pierce. Charlie, how are you?
Hey, Hal, how are you?
I'm spectacular.
Do you have two functioning feet? Because that seems to be what the prerequisite for hosting the show these days.
Absolutely. When, if you break a foot, you're out the door.
Well, I know you're interested in this subject, so I'm just going to throw this out. I was listening to WWOZ from New Orleans the other day,
uh-huh.
the world's greatest radio station, and I heard a song, and it was pretty good. It was kind of a kind of raw bluesy thing, and the guy came on and said, that's the new one from the new Foghat album. Do you know Foghat had a new album?
Sweet.
When did that happen?
Well, I think even when they put out an album, it's instantly old just because of the nature of being in a band called Foghat. You know what I mean? Literally, like, even if you look at their album covers,
yes.
I think they showed up worn in vinyl when they came to the store. They're like, we're not going to wrap them in plastic. It's better if they look like...
Pre-warped music.
Totally, yeah. We all of them are shipped on the dashboard of a VW bus.
Anyway.
So, welcome aboard. We were just, there's no shortage of subjects, certainly here, but this... I guess we should start with the amazing Jeff Sessions and the Elena Kagan confirmation hearings, and then Orrin Hatch saying he's not sure he would have voted for he would have voted to confirm Thurgood Marshall.
I thought the whole Jeff Sessions thing was an outlier. You know, this is the guy who, you know, he puts the salt and pepper shakers over the holes in his tablecloth at home,
right.
The eye holes. But
yes.
This is a coordinated campaign to
mm-hmm.
delegitimize one of the heroes of the last 50 years.
Oh, no question.
And this is absolute vandalism because it makes no political sense at all.
Right.
And it's not going to derail a nomination.
No, by no means. They're literally just spinning their heels. They're just using this to make a chip away at both. Also, I think it's you know, dog whistle coding for see what happens when you get, you know, a black president. You get judges who are sympathetic to putting more black people on the Supreme Court. That's probably
yeah.
where this is going, isn't
and
it?
By the way, you've got this New York Jewish, maybe lesbian woman who
right.
like really liked working for him. What I mean?
Who's an
you
academic.
Know what I mean? Like working for him.
Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely. That she really cares about this man. She worked very closely with this guy. You know, that part to me is madness, that they're totally comfortable with that. They think that the Tea Party and the insurgent white anger is
yeah.
enough to surf their way into office.
Well, they seem to be composed of nothing else now except the wingnut id.
Right.
There's no intellect behind this, because if you sit down and think about it for 15 minutes, you realize you're cutting your own throat.
Yeah.
History has made its judgment on Thurgood Marshall, folks, and history likes him a lot.
Absolutely.
History is very fond of him.
And I don't know anybody where you're going back. You know what one of the big problems was?
What?
When we got rid of segregation. Like, I don't know how you start an argument or a conversation with anyone in this country unless you're Borat in a, you know, and shooting a video at a rodeo in backstage.
Well, no, you start the conversation with the like-minded people who are mostly over 50 and mostly white and mostly nervous who you agree with. That, because that's basically all these people talk to now.
Right, and they're basically trying to scare those people into voting this year.
Yeah,
I think that's their one political strategy.
Yeah, I mean this is a television show for the base for the midterms because
right.
There's no political advantage to be gained. You're not going to derail the nomination. You're certainly not going to make any thinking person beyond your base wonder about Elena Kagan because she worked and admired Thurgood Marshall.
Yeah, that she has no judicial experience, even though she was Solicitor General and she argued cases before the Supreme Court, and she was head of the Harvard Law School. Like, the idea that somehow, like, she's some abstract academic, this is what we're going to vote. You know what the problem is? Education.
No, the people that I've talked to, Hal, on our side of the line that have their doubts about her have doubts about her strictly because she is a very deft politician and she does have that kind of experience.
Right.
They don't like the experience she's had.
Right.
You know, that's the thing. You know, what did she do? She brought in conservatives at Harvard Law School and she argued cases that folks disagree with, you know, as Solicitor General. So that, you know, the notion that she's kind of this naif that they've, you know,
right.
brought in from an ivory tower is hilarious.
Well, keep in mind.
It's like accusing Jeff Sessions of being tall.
Right, but they also understand that these people have a level of panic about, look at Stevens. I mean, he was nominated by a conservative president, was put there to be a conservative, essentially, and soundly argued for, you know, very centrist, if leftist, policies over the course of his career. So they're afraid if a guy that far on the right in their mind can end up that far on the left, what would somebody in the middle be like? They'll probably end up like William Ayers, you know.
Yeah, but
Karl Marx.
At least Karl Marx, or perhaps, you know, Jesus.
Right. God forbid.
Literally. This is performance for the cameras for next November.
Yes.
Because
I don't know how do you make an ad out of that? How do you go, I really stuck it to her. The Obama administration tried to put in this friend of black people, this woman who doesn't know she should have a husband.
Well, like, you make the ad by doing your questioning that way. That's your ad.
Right.
Basically, and you're talking about free media.
Well, you make a point on the, you know.
What do you think the clips on the news are going to be tonight? This is the man bite dog story of all time. Tomorrow, why Mother Teresa was a streetwalker?
Right. Exactly.
Why Gandhi didn't dress well?
Well, she did walk around on the street because he did most of his own sewing.
Yeah.
And that makes him a laborer and completely untrustworthy.
Yeah. I think this is purely, and you call it dog whistling. Yeah. I'm not even sure it's dog whistling. I think I can hear the faint whistle.
Yeah, I think
it's not that hard to understand.
No.
It's not code. You don't need the Enigma machine to figure out what these guys are doing.
Well, the funny thing is, and I think there's a reason for that. I think why it's become so overt and clear, we're like, wow, you guys don't even really code it that well anymore. It's pretty obvious, is because their electorate, the people that they're appealing to, have become less intellectual over time to an extraordinary extent.
Somebody should write a book about that. Oh, wait, I did. I'm sorry.
Oh, what do you know? Fantastic that people should pick up Charlie Pierce's book.
But no, you're right. I mean, I think you're talking about, I mean, Ed Schultz calls them low information voters, and he's being extraordinarily kind.
Right. He's being very generous in that regard. So,
because he's a big hearted man from the Heartland,
as you know.
It's
true. It's true. He likes hunting and steak.
He's hunting and steak and football and golf.
Right. Yeah. Which I don't know how that all happened. But
well, his son's a golfer.
Huh?
His son is a golfer.
For a living?
Yeah, trying to make it on the tour, yeah.
That's hilarious to me. Like, I think it's silly when people make a living playing football, and you can get killed, so I can go, okay, well, they want to pay you a lot because somebody else might turn your brains into jelly.
Right.
You know, but golf is like being paid to stroll. You know what I mean?
Being
like,
paid to stroll through really nice country.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a lovely park near my house, and I get $100,000 a year to
if I stroll through it better than you stroll
exactly,
through it.
Exactly, right, and at a slower pace.
This is a great nation.
Yeah, it's kind of stunning.
Yeah.
So then of course we move on to BP. Let's see how much time we got before we need to take a break. We're good. Got a few minutes. Yeah, great. Okay. Obviously we have moved in. I was saying this yesterday that I actually believe that we have a 20 day cycle in our brains in our modern media culture. In that we can't a story doesn't last for more than 20 days in our modern brains, and it just kind of peters away. And the first 5 days is, what's going on? And the next 5 days is, oh, my God, this is horrible. The third 5 days is, why hasn't somebody fixed it already? And then the last 5 days is, I can't deal with this anymore. I'm going to go think about something else.
That's your problem, folks. I live in Montana.
And I think that we're almost at that point in the arc of BP. The only thing that keeps it on the radar is that it has a new thing every 20 days.
Well, not just that, but we have live television.
Yes.
Which is very important. And anything we have live television on is fine.
Right.
I mean, because we have this live, even though, I wish they would get another angle on that camera.
Right, exactly.
Like a really cool shot from above or something?
Absolutely. Maybe with Bret Michaels involved somehow. Spout of Love or something like that, where it's just...
I don't know that this will actually stay to the template, though, because you're going to have, this kind of ripple effect in the Gulf where, oh, now we're going to do stories about shrimp fishermen in Florida. Now we're going to do stories about shrimp fishermen in southern Florida. And, oh, look, Haley Barber, here comes the oil.
Oh, totally.
Here comes the oil on your beaches now, pal.
Right. Again, it goes to my point that Americans tend to not care about pollution unless they can see it. And once we see
which was the whole justification for this person, was to keep the oil from keep the video from the beaches.
Right, exactly, and run the reporters off the beach so that they can't film the tar balls.
Very few local television stations have submarines where they can go out and film it underwater.
Right.
They all cut back. That got in the last cutbacks. They lost their traffic helicopters and their submarines.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is that if they do have money, they're putting it into the helicopters and stuff. And I think more coastal local news needs submarines. I think
the ability to project force and to project the naval force is important for local news.
Yeah. Well, I would trust any local anchor person with heavy machinery and weapons.
And nuclear-tipped torpedoes, absolutely.
Right, yeah. Because if anybody who can't staple down their own toupee right concerns me in that regard. But oddly enough, that we have this thing is going to – there's no way to fix this other than to fix it. That's the sad part.
Yeah. And I'm not entirely sure anybody knows how.
Yeah.
And that scares the hell out of me. Rachel Maddow had an interesting thing on her show last night where she went through the budget and BP's budget for learning how to research into fixing oil spills was zero.
Right.
Because I don't think it can be. I don't think with current technology they can fix this.
No.
I don't think there's any. I just don't think there's a solution to it.
I think you have to basically rebuild the thing. It's literally like you're trying to put out a fire with an eyedropper, no matter what you do, because it's so far down.
Yeah, I agree.
It's stunning to me by the way, that this has been allowed. That the drill baby drill crowd has actually been, is actually trying to, jumpstart their own ideals on this.
Well, look at Governor Kenneth DePage down there.
Right.
Who seems to want the absolute right to drill anywhere he wants and the absolute right to demand the federal government fix it when everything goes wrong.
Right. And it's funny, this whole small government crowd.
Yeah.
We want small government, I want small government. You know what I want? I want enormous government. I want huge frigging government because
I want a government big enough to stuff in that hole.
Exactly right. The only government I'm interested in is one that can handle stuff I can't handle on my own with a couple of friends. Like,
okay.
I can't dig a sewer pipe from my house to the sewer treatment plant in Long Beach. I can't do Gulf Coast recovery. I can't do Chinese trade barriers.
What do you want from me? I can only wash one pelican at a time.
Exactly. Yes. I can handle. I got four pelicans in me, I think. So the idea that we want smaller and smaller government has put us exactly in this position. And you actually have Republicans coming out and saying, and they think this is a legitimate point to make, that the problem is too much government regulation.
Yes, because if there weren't all these regulations for BP to ignore, they would have been in much better shape.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't the fact that that literally there were people put in office that they elect people who hate government to be in government. That's like looking for a serial killer to be your babysitter.
Yeah,
I hate kids and I like to beat them. Well, see, we should be back by midnight.
Yeah, there's a reason why we haven't allowed Charlie Manson a second career as a meat cutter.
Exactly.
Basically.
Right. Even though he may have the skill.
Wait, by now, who knows?
Right.
I mean, the guy's been in jail for 300 years, it seems like.
He does make great hair sculptures. I don't know if you've seen this.
But yeah. The other, and of course, every 5 years or so, he comes up for parole, and we get a couple of more really great MSNBC weekend specials.
Right, exactly. On why he shouldn't.
Yes. Because the parole board looks at him and says, "What are you nuts? Yeah, Charlie Manson, back to jail."
Right, yeah. What are you going to do? Work at IHOP?
Yeah, really. We'll find a neighborhood you can move into. Okay.
Yeah. And can you imagine? By the way, with the new laws or whatever, him having to go door to door.
That's right.
I'm Charlie Manson. I live down the block from you.
I'm a cult leader and a mass murderer.
I'm a rooster illusion.
I'll be living in the duplex down the street and working at Home Depot.
It's not me that's evil. It's my shoes that are evil. I'm the man, but I'm the man inside the man. Thank you very much. Can you get off my porch, please?
That's right. Play now.
I get ideas from every hair in my head. What? Thank you. Can you please go away? We're going to take a break, but can you stick with me?
No, I got to actually.
You got to skedaddle? Okay.
I got it, yeah.
Thank you, Charlie Pierce, for being with us.
That's been great.
We will have you back on. Again, a voice of clarity, and tell me the name of your book again. So,
Idiot America.
Pardon?
Idiot America.
Idiot America. That's right.
Stupidity became a virtue in the land of the free. Now in paperback.
Idiot America. Because some idiots can't hold a whole book, like a hardback book. My wrist hurt. Is it on iPad? Can you get it?
I have no idea.
I'm going to look it up.
I will effort that as we speak and talk to Steph next week about it.
I will make sure, if it is possible, I will let everybody know on the radio.
All right,
thanks so much,
Al.
Charlie.
Bye now.
Cheers. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We seem to be having an issue with the phone lines. Something going on with the phone lines. But we will clarify that, and we will fix that, and I'll be able to take your calls when we come back. And, of course, top of the hour, we're going to have the lovely and talented Rick Overton will be joining us, as well as Christine Romans from CNN will be with us. So we'll be back with one more break right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
More fun than a barrel of monkeys, moron.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Step 12 is our number, and our lines are actually working again. But first, we're lucky enough to have early, a few minutes before the top of the hour,
in
studio with us, the Emmy Award winning, the brilliant Rick Overton. Rick, you're fantastic.
Hal, yeah. Thanks for having me in, buddy.
Absolutely.
It was fun to see you at the party last night. And congratulations on your brilliant Charmageddon special.
Thank you.
It's a great special, man.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it, brother. And I have to say, you have been consistently one of my comedy heroes for a very long time, and I count myself lucky that we are friends. And well,
it's mutual, man. I think you're one of the good word warriors, you know.
Thanks, brother. So yeah, I'm
teachers.
For those of you, I mean, it's hard to boil down Rick's credits into manageable chunks for those of you that are listening. But it goes all the way back. I'm trying to think of, is it 1987 the first time I saw you in a movie? Probably 1986 the first time I was like aware of you, was like, this guy's really funny.
Because
you started, you know, piecing through these things, and a lot of people. You know, I often quote you from Groundhog Day as one of the kind of local guys when he goes, what would you do if your life was the same every day and there was nothing going on? And you went, that pretty much sums it up for me. You know, you're going to puke in the car or outside the car? I think both.
Yeah, some of that was improv because Harold's a second city man.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of that was his brilliant writing, but then he also let some play occur.
Yeah.
It's like, I want heaven to look like that.
Right, exactly.
The director lets you just run in a scene that
that's
goes
what heaven
forever.
Is. Yeah.
You know?
Just a big fun scene where you get to be funny.
And the best part of heaven that you get every now and then, because you don't want to, you know, spoil it like chocolate, is you'd be in a permanent sketch where it's a Tim Conway, Harvey Korman scenario, and what you just said has killed him to the point where the scene has to freeze and bounce and hold a straight face with tears streaming.
Right,
for a minute.
Exactly. Well, I hopefully think that's what we look forward to in the next hour with you, here. I want you to have here. Because we're going to take a couple of calls, because a couple of people have been hanging on for a little bit, and we lost them when we got them back.
Oh.
Okay, and Marty in North Carolina is saying, educated people know that bigger government is bad. How do you mean?
How do I mean bigger government is bad? Because you work, right? You work for a living.
Sure.
Okay, well, you're a registered Democrat, I assume, because you're on left talk radio.
Yeah.
I'm a registered Democrat, but I don't necessarily vote Democrat every time. The reason I don't vote Democrat is because I listen to the issues. I don't say okay, and not help.
So wait, but we're losing. I don't want to talk party politics. I want you to tell me why bigger government is a problem.
I'm going to why bigger government is wrong because, and I'm using this because originally Democrat was for the working people. Now Democrat seems to be to take the money from the working people and give to the people that are not working because we've got to help them out. We've got to help them out. Well,
oh, I see. So you're against unemployment benefits. This isn't about big government. No, this is the idea that
unemployment benefits. I'm against people that are able to work that are taking benefits.
I see. So basically, you have this idea. You have this idea that the 1.5 million people who are, you know, a record number of unemployed people, that a small wedge of them that you think are permanently unemployable mean that the rest of them.
Why do we have such unemployment now? Because in what do
because
you want to do?
Because
you want to take away
since Reagan, we've driven all the factory jobs into other countries.
Oh well, God, who voted for that? Who signed NAFTA? Who signed NAFTA?
I'm not a fan. You're not going to find that I'm a fan of NAFTA. But let's talk about.
I am from a state and I'm from a town where every industry here left, and you know why it left? Because of NAFTA. Because we said we can make it cheaper over there. My thing is, if you're going to make it over there, then tax the crap out of it coming back here.
Right. So, but again, I don't get how this leads to, if NAFTA is the problem, then how is unemployment to be blamed on people who just don't want to work? Again, this stays. We only have 30.
You're like, okay, you want to know about people that don't want to work? Come and look around. Drive around town. Look at the young people that are just sitting on their butt collecting money.
I mean, if I may ask
you
a question,
how little
money would you take to show up for a job?
Right.
Per week.
We got 10
What's
seconds.
The smallest amount you would take per week?
We got to take a break. We're up against the top of the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12. I'm Hal Sparks. This is the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back and good morning. It is a jam-packed, amazing show. We're having a great conversation, and not the least of which was our last caller who was. Came on to talk about how his point was, and this is what was written in the call screen thing, educated people know that big government is a bad idea. And what happened when we got him on the phone to start talking about him? It's a problem. It's lazy teenagers who are living off of unemployment. We shouldn't extend unemployment benefits because that's what Dems do is they try to give, take my money and give it to the lazy people. This is where the argument went. Not... big government policies as far as spending and it's all the social problems, the social programs. Taking care of another human being is a horrible thing for a government to do. I happen to think that's what they exist for. I need a huge government because I can't handle the pickup after a tidal wave. I can't.
He said educated. He didn't say how he was educated.
Oh, that's true, right? With a carrot.
Home educated.
With a banana and an inner tube.
Home education only works if the people in the home know something.
Let me bring on an example of an educated person. This is how you like that for a segue. The lovely, the talented Christine Romans from CNN's Your Money. Hi, Christine.
I love that segue. Do it again. The lovely and the talented.
The
do
lovely
again,
and talented. I've already, look, people already know I have a brain crush on you that's extended for quite some time, ever since the first time we were on, I was on Your Money, and I was like, why don't I get to be on with Christine? I know Allie's a nice person, but where's Christine? And they're like, she's away.
But the best stuff, and the best stuff happens at the break. Like, they stop rolling, and then you and I are still gabbing all the way through the break, solving the world's problems and talking about current account deficits and trying to figure out what happened to American manufacturing.
I know.
So excited about it.
Hey, get a show, you two.
Exactly. Well, that may be the future of this. Would be the Hal Sparks and Christine Romans, and I try to add some.
Sorry, Hal. Christine Romans and Hal Sparks.
That's true. Excellent point.
Ladies first.
Yes, I was going in reverse alphabetical order. That's how I was taught. I was brought up. So that last caller you heard, obviously.
Yeah.
His big problem with big government was the extension of unemployment benefits.
Look, teenagers aren't sitting around getting unemployment benefits, A.
Yeah.
B, the problem with the big need for unemployment benefits is we don't have jobs to go to. And,
right.
And economists, people like Larry Summers, who's advising the president, people like Ken Rogoff, someone who I really trust who works at Harvard, who used to be the chief economist of the IMF, lots of other people say, yes, in normal bad labor markets, there's a small percentage of the unemployment rate that's because people aren't looking for a job because they're getting benefits. This isn't a normal bad
right.
labor market. We're not creating the jobs. What we have to do before you can complain about big government and jobless benefits, we have to have jobs that people are not going
not
to.
Not going to, right. Who are, yeah. You yeah. can't be called as lazy if you actually can't do anything.
Look, 46% of the people who are unemployed or long-term unemployed, this country has never seen that. That's not Western democracies do not have 46% of the people who are unemployed are long-term unemployed, meaning they're out of work for 6 months or longer. This is a really big, big problem that's going to take some big policy solutions. In the near term, it's been unemployment benefits, but as you can see, the Senate for three times now has sort of nixed extending this. There's a big conversation to be had. What are you going to do about it?
Right.
What are you going to do about retraining? You know, it's clear that the skills in this country don't match where the jobs are growing, and we're not growing enough of those jobs anyway to be able to absorb everyone.
And also, by the way, the arc of growing those jobs is long. These are,
right.
you know, science and technology jobs. These are not the kind of retraining you're talking about for the jobs of the future, the 21st century.
Green should be the thing, but, gee, what would be standing in the way of green technology?
Right.
Well, you know, the funny thing is about
19th century technology.
The Labor Department doesn't even measure those yet because a green job can be something like weatherizing a mobile home, you know, or it can be solar panels. Or, I mean, we still don't even know. I mean, the funding just started this year to be able to measure for the Labor Department next year what are green jobs. And besides, you know, green job is that going to replace 8.4 million jobs lost during the recession?
And certainly
not
immediately. The point I'm trying to make is that you're looking at science technology jobs, which are really the future of well-paying jobs. Over time, we're talking 6 years of education before you're a legitimate force in that job market. Now there's some, you know, people who can be, you know, bumped up, you know, your IT technical grads to some degree, ITT technical grads. But ultimately, this is not something that somebody who was working at an auto plant immediately shifts over to doing.
And what about those lazy teenagers that your last caller was talking about?
Right.
Is our education system preparing them with enough math and science skills so that they can go and begin in a community college and get the kind of of education or training that's going to get them to the next level?
No. And B, I'll go one further, that they're not doing it in language and history where the jobs of the future, quite frankly, are in international business and in international technology exchanges and in international work. And literally, like, you know, the number of foreign languages taught in a school, if they have a Spanish class, we're lucky anymore. It's one of the first things they end up dropping, and it's the thing that makes you internationally viable. We are, you know, this is a global economy. Those future jobs, even the green ones, you're going to be dealing with a company in China that is producing the solar panels.
And Germany.
Right. Especially
Germany and the Philippines and elsewhere. Yeah, I mean, it all goes together, and to boil it down like your last caller did into one simplistic, people are just, you know, screwing the system. It's just, it's not. This was the worst catastrophe in 70 years in the American economy.
Right.
And I've argued with other economists about this before, some of whom say, look, there are people who are sitting there in two income households who are paying a mortgage on a jobless check, and they're not looking for work. And I say, I don't think the average American is sitting there going, I am so lucky to be out of work and getting a $400 check this week. I mean, I'm really getting something for nothing.
Totally. And by the way, that check's going to dry up no matter how much they keep extending it to some degree. So the idea that you would count on that as your, you know, as an infinite source of income is mind-boggling, especially a number this large.
Yeah. Maybe I'm a Pollyanna, but I really do believe the Americans, we love to work.
Yeah.
And the American work ethic is unrivaled in the world. I mean, you look anywhere. I mean, we work long weeks. We love to work. We define ourselves by our successes and our sales and what we've done, and we use that as a role model for our families. I mean, I really think that people want to work. We have to figure out how to get the jobs here so people can and can start moving again in their jobs.
They're literally striking in France because they were going to raise the retirement age from 60 to 62. I mean, this was literally, people are in the streets about this in 60. And in America, you can argue, I think, legitimately with a lot of people in this country and go, you know, if we moved it from 65 to 70, it wouldn't be that big a deal because I'm a little more viable than I would have been. I like working. What I do for a living. I don't necessarily want to retire at 65. A lot of the people who retire are dead within 2 years anyway.
Take a Centrum Silver, get back on the wheel.
Right.
Hey, they got great new hips and knees. I mean, you can, yeah, we can
totally
keep going. I mean, evolution says our bodies give up at like 62, but you know, give me some new parts, I can keep going to 90.
I beg your pardon. That's evolution based on research that happened when we all used to work in coal mines and breathe, you know, like silver dust every single day.
The lucky ones.
Yeah, according to the TED conference, the speakers they had on longevity is 150 years the human body can reach right now with modern technology, and 250. They said that this is fascinating. This I love. The first person to live to be 250 years old is alive right now.
But what if you're eating McDonald's and watching TV?
Well, no. That's how we keep Social Security solvent, is we keep you eating crap and smoking, and we convince you that red meat makes you tough, and then we kill off that group. This is what Rick was making during the break, that there, you know, a lot of people use a populist message for a depopulist policy, that they, you know, they talk to people, you know, going, hey, you know, you have the right as an American to treat your body like crap and not get along with anybody else in the world and live basically so that these people end up dying off.
There's only one way the devil gets in your house, right?
Right.
You got to invite him in.
Right, exactly. So Christine, you obviously have the solution to all this. That's why I wanted you on the phone today.
I have the solution, huh?
Yeah, you of all people. Because I do refer to you when I go to CNN as the smart one. And I don't mean just on your money. I mean the whole network.
I have the solution. The solution is a strong economy with lots of jobs, lots of different kinds of jobs, so people of different walks of life and different talents and influences in different parts of the country can all have something to choose from. That's my solution.
Variety. And the variety of life. And this is what you and I talked about a little bit in that special in The American Dream.
Mm-hmm.
We did was the idea that at one point The American Dream was all about stability. And,
right.
and in many ways, an illusion of stability. White picket fence, normal house, two kids, wife and husband, nothing ever goes wrong. We got the dog. I have a factory job. She works as a nurse if we even need a second job, but this is it. And that's how. And if we're lucky, this is what we will do until we die. And now,
Gary Mathers as the beaver.
Absolutely. And it was sold as that. And then you come back with, I think the modern version, what do we look at when we see rich people? What do we think of when they can do anything they want, anytime they want? And so the American dream has now shifted from stability to flexibility. The idea that I can have anything I want in my life. And with the modern, you know, infotainment, you know, between the web and cable TV, the new dream is not a loft, is a loft apartment now. The Friends apartment, you know, that we all grew up watching on, right, you know, on Friends in the 90s, that's now replaced people's dream home.
Right.
The dogs have gotten smaller, so you can carry them around.
Mm.
Kids have been put off till later. Except in your case, where I think you're having one every 6 months, is it now?
Yeah, well, no, I'm on the verge of number three. In fact, you're lucky my water didn't break right before I called you.
I tell myself that all the time. And if it does, by the way, I'll talk you through it. I took a Lamaze class a long time ago.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we'll stay on the line. I'll be like OnStar.
Well, I've done my part for the American dream. You know, I mean, the way that I look at it is this. I mean, it's changing, and it changed from my great-grandparents to my grandparents to my parents to me. I mean, every generation takes that dream and shapes it in their own, sort of in their own way, and then and moves it forward. And one of the great things about that American reality show that we did, Hal, was the guy, the scholar who came on and said, the American dream has been on the verge of collapse for 300 years.
Right.
And that's what makes it so American, is that we know it's special and it's evolving, and we panic about losing it. And so that helps make it, that makes us make it different and better. The question this time is, are my children for sure going to have a better life starting line than I did, or that my parents did?
You know, I think if they don't, I think they will. And if they don't, it will be ferociously bad. It won't even be close to, like, it will either be improve, not as fast as we would like, but gradually, or it will just be, you know, we will be literally back to loincloths. These are our two options.
Yeah, right.
Loincloths in the backyard. No, here, did you read the Paul Krugman piece in the Times on Sunday about the Third Depression?
Yes.
Paul Krugman, you know, he's got a Nobel Prize in economics, so, you know, you tend to kind of give him a little bit of credence when he gets really concerned about something. His big concern is, like, this whole G20 thing this weekend, all this talk about pulling in, not spending so much, getting, you know, austerity, fiscal conservatism, that we're going to throw ourselves into another big, long, scary period, because we need to be spending like crazy. This goes back to unemployment benefits. We need to be spending like crazy, he says, because we are providing the juice and the grease for the economy right now.
Right.
And it's this false prudence that people are preaching.
Right. Penny wise and pound foolish. I mean,
exactly.
That's really what we're being. Christine Romans, I can't thank you enough. I want to make sure that you get off the air in time to, you know, if you need to ice your feet and put them up or whatever you're doing at this stage of the pregnancy.
I'm wearing stilettos at this stage of the pregnancy. You know me, Hal.
That's true. She's amazing. Like, I didn't even know she was pregnant. She gets off her mind the desk, and she looks like, you look like you're ready to go at any moment. You know, there's an element where, and she maintains such great shape. You're in such great physical condition, but your belly is so baby that it's like the alien mother in Aliens. You just kind of like look completely normal, just with this giant kind of apparatus.
That beachball is going to pay your Social Security someday. So
absolutely, I'm for it. I hope your kids pick my nurse. That's all I'm saying. Christine Romans from CNN, Your Money, and I can't thank you enough for being on this morning. We got to take a break, and you are awesome, and I will always refer to you as the lovely and talented, but also as the smart one. Thank you, Christine.
Bye, Hal.
Cheers. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. And, of course, I've got Rick Overton in studio with me. We'll be back right after this with a really short break because we went a little long. But we'll get to chat at you, and we'll take your calls. 1-800-STEPH-12. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
And we'll be right back.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Show. It's a blitzkrieg of information. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. In studio with me, of course, the brilliant, the hilarious, the intellectual giant, and yet my favorite thing about most people think outside the box. Rick Overton thinks outside the dodecahedron.
Oh, very highly flattered, right? I try to think inside. I've never been invited in the box.
Right,
I'm viewed as riffraff to the box.
Exactly. The box is not interested in having you around. Yeah. Because, quite frankly, you walk around to the edges and start going, poof, 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 poof. I think we can take this wall out. Like, hey, get out of the box.
They don't like you walking around the outside of the box.
Stop it.
Oh, that's where he puts the girl out, takes the girl out and puts the bird in the box.
Right,
You're not supposed to walk
around
the back.
You're ruining the magic trick.
I see the doorway there.
Right. This whole illusion will collapse if people like Rick Overton get to dissect it. And we were, you know, this is an interesting, we were talking during the break, you know, and Christine, you know, brings up great stuff about whether or not there'll be a future or not. And we were talking about the History Channel And the fact that the History Channel has become all war. I call it the Hitler Channel in my act tonight, and you also.
I say that's the We're All History Channel.
Right, yeah.
Because, oh, if it isn't the meteorite, the caldera will explode,
the supervolcanoes
The supervolcano, but no matter what, we're all doomed.
An asteroid.
So.
Which, by the way, the History Channel has no business talking about it, because that is one possible future. Which the History Channel should relegate itself to only things that have happened in the past. They could run a talk show and at least be legitimate because it just happened.
Do you ever see When Humans Are Gone? And it's all right now, right here and now cars and right here and now building. Not Jetsons, big long spike buildings. It's right now stuff.
What if we all got wiped out? Right.
Right now, it's something that killed off only humans. And yet the deers, when humans are gone, a deer will live in your apartment. As the vines creep around your window. And like, it makes me think, what only killed humans? Didn't kill them. They're talking about the rapture.
Right. Yes.
So it's a religion as science.
Well, and I've always thought the rapture is actually a reflection of social retardation and sort of fear of the other, the xenophobia gone amok, where you go, I don't want to have to learn how to deal with gay people and black people and Mexicans.
Get me out of here.
I don't want to learn a language.
Complicated game.
Yeah, Jesus, take me someplace simple.
But you know what? And some people say, what if it's really just aliens who come and scoop up a group of humans to take off when Earth is screwed and it floods itself from the pole shift? And I go, okay, well, out of those groups of humans, if you're the aliens, who do you want to take?
Mm-hmm.
The violent, gun-toting, irrational ones?
Right.
Or the really peaceful, meek ones?
Yeah.
So maybe the Earth they're inheriting is a whole other world.
The culturally diverse and open-minded ones, right.
Yeah. Because I don't want violent people on my ship like
that.
Well,
you look at Zachariah Sitchin's story about what, you know, that the Bible is basically an abduction story and that we were planted here by aliens. And he makes the case that the Tower of Babel story is just aliens coming down, looking at us. They said they built a tower that would reach unto heaven, read rocket. And human beings had seen rockets, and we started building fake ones, and they went, well, wait a second. These people are still stoning each other over adultery and crap. We can't set them loose on the universe. Let's scatter them all over the earth, change their color, change their language, and they'll never leave the planet until they can all get together. Until they either find one language or enough cultural comfort where we can, okay, now you can meet an alien and not want to beat it to death immediately.
So to me, a racist, there's only one race. Your color definition in the coding isn't enough to switch races. You go to the zoo to see another race.
Right. And species, it's speciesism.
Species is a race. And so when you're a racist, you hate the humans, which means I think you're an invading alien when you're a racist because you hate my species.
That's an interesting...
Now, and you took human form, but you don't operate it right.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get the brain to work
again,
right.
Outside the dodecahedron, I say, we got to take a break. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be taking our calls and talking to Rick after this break. And we will really kind of push the boundaries of acceptable options here, I think, going into with the progressive agenda and the things we really want, the things that are good to people.
Yes.
How you really are good to as many people as you can be, which I think is the goal. My goal as a progressive, my goal as a liberal is, how do I make the life good for as many people as I can? That's when you're making policy. We got 10 seconds. We'll be back in just a few minutes. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks with Rick Overton, filling in for Stephanie Miller. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. That's right. So Tony goes, we're trying to come back with some music, and I'm suggesting things like Too Much Time on My Hands by Styx, and Rick suggests Too Much Information by the Police or whatever. And he's like, I haven't got time for that. And Tony left to his own devices. The thing he has queued, Ace of Spades by Motorhead. Lemmy, who once had a contest with, I think it was Nikki Sixx, on who could go a whole year without bathing. And and by the way, Lemmy is in the new Danko Jones video. Making an appearance in that or whatever. I have a belief that the moles on Lemmy's face, the kind of bumps on his face that he has, if you cut them off, it would be like Samson. He would lose his voice and not be able to sing anymore. Just a scary-looking individual.
Where are my moles?
It's kind of amazing. So, I've talked about this a little bit, and I think I want to get into this conversation with you, Rick, because one of our favorite topics of conversation when I do it is this – is information control from media, and especially, you know, Fox News does it very well and very effectively. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the purpose of it being the difference between informing and directing.
Yeah.
You know.
Who else tells you you get to decide except for someone who decided for you?
Right.
Who else points that stuff out? It's like the guy at the cocktail party who keeps coming up and telling you how not gay he is.
Right. Well, and look at fair and balanced. It's a trademarked phrase. You know what happens when you trademark something? It doesn't have to be true legally.
Oh, that's right, trademarking.
If you call something a if this is natural choice as a food, you go, okay, well, then the word natural has to mean something. But if it's natural choice, trademark, TM, well, it's kind of, okay, naturally you would choose this if you had a bullet in your side. You know, like, naturally, if you were hungry and the only thing around, this is what you would eat instead of something else.
It's like naming your kid Marshall doesn't mean he's the Marshall.
Exactly, right. And so, and in the three networks, I've said that MSNBC has the only honest moniker. Because Fox is, because like fair and balanced is what you get from Fox, which is a trademark thing and is completely untrue. Then you look at CNN, which is the most trusted name in news, which if you know isn't the most trustworthy name in news, it means more people trust it. That doesn't mean it deserves that trust. It just means it's talked you into it over time that you actually believe that's the point.
Well, it means it was true back when they bought the name.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's
true now.
True now,
it doesn't have to be true consistently.
Yeah.
MSNBC? The place for politics. That's all they're saying. Mm-hmm. They're not making any promises on what they're saying message-wise. They're just saying, this is what we do here.
Yeah,
which is fair
and balanced. All that saying, fair and balanced, and you decide is like, come on, guys. You don't have to be a comic to be able to figure out you're getting played. I mean, comics figure these things out because we're always trying to work on what's that one last window in your head for me to get in, tickle your brain. And when you do it, you check every window in someone's head. And we're accidentally very good judges of character.
Right.
Except in our personal lives.
Right.
It shuts off. And
happens with
firewalls completely with just a helmet.
Right. Well,
my picture of you just pasted on the inside of what I want. You know?
Yeah, right. Well, and I think we as people have, our job is really to look, choose obtuse angles to see things from so that we can present them from a point of view that people haven't seen, but they may have without their own, subconsciously, they're not aware. This irritates them, but they can't articulate why. And we, at the base level, we articulate your discomfort or your irritation or your confusion in a way that makes sense. In another way, we come up with solutions.
And you condense it, you make it easy, and you have to understand the point or you didn't get it.
Right, exactly. So I think there's a fascinating element to how media is handled, and this argument that the right has carried and has done very well, that the lesser of two evils argument, which is, the idea that, when you go to the election, it's the choice between lesser of two evils. Anyways, they throw this all the time. And then what they try to make themselves presented as is the heroes outside that lesser of two evils idea. Is that we're pro-military and we're pro-fiscal conservatism, so we're the lesser of two evils in that regard. Even though none of that stands up if you actually look at their policy. But they float this idea, the lesser of two evils, so that you'll stay home. That you'll be so pissed and so disenfranchised. And this idea that if you're not getting everything you want, you're not getting anything you want. And then they take their own base and they drive them with vitriolic hate and fear and, social networking type of stuff, anti-abortion, anti-gay, anti-woman.
Was anyone that keeps warning you about some other group's going to come and get you? And, the one that says the only group that ever does that is someone who's doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that have that many guns is crooks have that many guns.
Right.
Because they know the cops are coming. People that say they don't want big government is, of course they don't. That's like bank robbers don't want the cops to come in and the bank guard to wake up.
Look at.
But here's the other point I want to make is, and so they keep saying, look how bad the Democrats are. And you know what? They're crappy bank guards.
Mm-hmm.
But no, either way, don't go back to the robber.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Get a better guard than the Democrats.
Exactly. Start improving on that system.
The Republicans are the bank robbers.
Right. And are
either
open
way, don't
about
go
it.
Stockholm on us now.
Right. Yeah, start identifying with your, the hostage taker.
If you can't beat them, don't join them.
Right. So if you look at, and this kind of makes your point of, these people who you rail against something are often railing, protecting their own interests in this regard, especially when they want more laws that favor themselves and against other people. Like if you look at the Oklahoma GOP is actually now pushing making gay sex illegal again following the Texas thing.
Sodomy laws all across the board, which, that's scaring a lot of good up. upright Christian people, but there's a couple of sodomy things I kind of like.
Whoa, exactly.
Now, hang on now.
Wait, as long as I don't do it with another man, you're fine, right? Yeah, but here's the thing. You look at especially the TV preacher crowd, which is one of my favorite groups, who rail against the mark of the beast, and they're worried about the national ID card, and they're worried about the metal strips in dollar bills, and we're moving away from a cash society, and it's all credit based and stuff. And some conversation we had there.
Some legitimacy in
that. However, what is the reasoning for this? And the reason is what cash is used for in their circles is prostitution and drugs. And they can't buy it on credit because there will be a record. And if they're busted, if you or I as comedians ever got busted for purchasing, cash, if we use a credit card to pay for a massage or to buy some pot at a dispensary or something like that, arguably, we could get out of it because of our lifestyle and because of our openness about who we are. We're honest about our own. We don't have a holier than thou idea. We don't go, I'm better than you, and I don't participate in any of this nonsense. Blah blah. We just live like we live, and we would be honest and kind of free about that. But when you pretend you live your whole life holier than thou, and you're you're taking gay people, for example, and you're making them look, sexually explosive, and they're inhuman almost. They don't have any connections. They want to get married, but just so they can have sex with each other. They don't care about each other. This is not about love and heart. This is because they are disgusting perverts, and it's a choice, and blah, blah, blah. If you get busted for a sexual perversion that's a choice, it's harder to make that argument. So they can get away with a lot of this stuff.
And they
not
realize,
because they care about the mark of the beast.
Yeah, it's just an untraceable record.
Exactly.
That is part of the whole why so many priests get into the thing. It's, mm-hmm. What's the safest place to hide.
Mm-hmm. When your entire society doesn't...
I have an impunity shield in this cross, that it makes it 10 times harder for you to come and get me.
Right.
When I hide behind this thing. So
because
I structure
everybody else
my life
who,
to stand behind it.
Everybody who legitimately believes in it has to come to my defense because they're defending not me, but their own belief system.
Yeah,
hide behind the safety of that.
Yeah, and it's almost it's kind of trackable in reverse.
Yeah.
Almost instantaneously, mm-hmm.
Well, there's not a single one of these guys, Jeff Sessions on the Judiciary Committee, who's arguing against Thurgood Marshall, arguing against the Civil Rights Act. I guarantee this guy runs on a Christian platform wherever he is and views himself as a family man with family values. They always use that kind of code wording. And then any family that doesn't have a net worth of over $150,000, the hell with them. Certain families have more values than others.
Right.
You are more valuable to the electorate than they are. And that's how I care for you. When I say family values, that's what I mean as a this GOP congressperson. That's a scary notion.
You can see why they'd want to put themselves into politics.
Absolutely.
It's the other way is how else are you going to protect yourself in case you got one of you, unless you have one of your guys out there looking out for you in the building that decides that.
I want to take a call. Tim in Madison. We've got a bunch of calls that, this is a good call. Tim in Madison.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
Good
you there?
Morning.
How are you?
Good. The caller that you had at the top of the hour, saying how unemployment is, just a bunch of people who don't want to go to work or anything like that. I was once upon a time making 18 something an hour, so 700 something a week.
Mm-hmm.
When I lost my job, I had to go to unemployment, so I went down to nearly 297 a week.
Right.
I really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Taking my whole
fun?
Lifestyle out. It took me 8 months to find a job again, and I was applying for everything
Thank
from
God.
Fast food to anything. When I finally got a job now, I'm making more than I was on unemployment, but I'm still not anywhere near I was. I took a job that basically I could be like, okay, I'm getting off unemployment, so I'm making more money and getting insurance again. That was my only goal. Not like I was hoping that I could sit on unemployment for, a week or two and just sit around the house and lounge. It was nothing like that. I immediately started looking for a new job, and it took me, 8 months. You can't count. These people are saying that
Yeah.
A lot of these right-wing people are saying that, oh, it's just people who don't want to go to work. They're just enjoying living off the government, just barely paying their bills. How can they say that? How can they think that?
Right.
Like, it's every
American's don't
dream,
think
just
it.
A parade to hope that they can pay their bills and that's it.
They don't think it. They're told to think it.
Right.
Well, that's the difference. He has nothing to back it up with because he didn't get that part. They didn't tell him that part.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
right.
Apparently not. I don't understand where unemployment is needed, and I can't believe that. They're saying that's going to add to deficit. I'm sorry. It's going to add more to deficit when people start losing their houses because they're counting on unemployment to make sure that they can pay at least
and the trickle in neighborhoods.
Pay their rent or pay what they have to pay. Once all that is going, once that's gone, what's going to happen? I almost feel like this is what happened during the plague back in the Dark Ages, because you're going to have all these people who once upon a time could afford these things, and now they can't. So now you're going to have people who definitely can afford it moving into homes that they think they can afford, and it's going to ruin our economy
more. They're just going to try and keep you outside the wall. That's a big part of it. I mean, that's what happened in the Dark Ages, and that's really part of it. And I appreciate your call, man.
Thanks,
and
Sal.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers. The margin on unemployment has gotten so narrow over time because of this lazy welfare mother idea that's been pushed since Reagan, that people are effectively lazy. This points to such a negative view of humanity on behalf of the GOP in particular, and it's a class thing. The idea that
it's a class thing. It's not even right and left. It's up and down.
Yeah.
And it's monetarily up and down.
Right. The idea that if you got something, you want to hang on to it really hard. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's hope in one thing.
Mm-hmm.
That this media, this big brother that's watching us, we're watching it, and other people are watching all of our media, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting to the children of these oligarchs.
Right.
And as they crap the bed in succession, I think their children will come in with something new, realizing we're hooked up in a way my parents didn't tell me was true. I'm looking forward to not the Illuminati, but the Disillusionati.
Yeah.
The wealthy people that break free and go, hey, I didn't understand karma before, but I don't want to be on that side of the chain when it's my turn to pay for it later. So I'm going to use my power differently. And if enough of us and our children get together, they can undo some of the damage, the monstrous, hellish damage that their parents brought.
Which, by the way, this is exactly what's happening. This is what's happening. The Obama administration, people complain about what they're not doing. Go take a look at the bills that have passed while Obama's been in office. Go take a look at who's been put in what positions, and tell me that he's not actively, daily, trying to reverse 8 years of Bush particularly, but 50 years of a march towards blind, class-oriented conservatism.
Yeah.
We'll be right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm lucky enough to have Rick Overton in here with me. We're just coming into the tail end of the show. 1-800-STEPH12 is our number. We got a bunch of people on the line. I want to get to some of them after we come back from this break.
Great.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome to the party barn. May we take your order? It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Show. See that here? I'm checking with Tony to make sure we're all clear.
Forgot that song.
Yeah.
I haven't heard it in a long time.
Too much time on my hands. Yeah, I'm sitting on a bar stool talking like a damn fool. Got the 12 o'clock news. I've given up hope for the afternoon soaps and a bottle of cold brew. This is the anthem of the guy who thinks that all these people who are on trying to get extended unemployment benefits want to be sitting around doing nothing. This is a meme that is pushed by the right, that there is a new crop of welfare mothers and fathers and college graduates who the first priority that they have is getting out of any work that they have to do and being able to cash a welfare check or cash an unemployment check and do nothing. This is their opinion of the American people, and a 10% of
I don't know how 70... they can say they love Jesus when they keep
peeing on everything he advised them to do.
I agree. Well, I mean, hey, anybody from the state of Michigan? Because state of Michigan has arguably a 17% unemployment rate, and years of Reaganomics have obliterated the factories in that state, and NAFTA too. I'm not going to disagree with that one element to that what that caller was saying. You start handing off jobs elsewhere, but I mean this active fight against anybody being able to have benefits long enough for them to get a job, take care of their family, feed their children in the worst economy in 70 years points to not a feeling about fiscal conservatism, but about people, individuals.
Like it's almost like they want something really bad to happen to those people. It's
they
want
to get
like
rid of them.
They want it. They want them. They want the roads free and clear of them.
I think that when they find out in situations like this that the suicide rate goes up, I think they shrug it off and go, "Hey, you know,
shoot them all, kill them all, and let God sort them out."
The first person to ever say that, Catholic priest. You know where that phrase comes from?
No.
It comes from the day the Templars were killed, the Friday the 13th, which is why it's a bad day.
Oh, right, where they got rid of all the
the Templars, right.
Yeah,
there's
right.
200.
Which is why Friday the 13th is a number.
Here. Exactly. There were 200 Templars in a city, and there was the army that the Vatican had put together to wipe out the heretics, and the leader of the commander said, there's 200,000 people in that town, and there's only 200 heretics, but the townspeople won't give them up. They won't tell us who's who, because they know we're here to kill them. But we're not going to kill 200,000 people, are we? And the priest said, kill them all, God will know his own.
Mm.
And I think there's an element of legs to that kind of thought that finds its way into people like Jeff Sessions.
They have small RAM space, and when there's not enough digital room in his head to own more people, those people got to die
in
his
mind
because he doesn't have the room for them.
Buddy in Columbus, Ohio, wanted to talk about Jeff.
Yes,
Sessions.
Let's talk about Jefferson Beauregard Sessions.
Yeah, right. The most cartoony racist name to come along in a very long time.
The man Riverboat is named after Jefferson Davis, head of the Confederate States of America, and General P.T. Beauregard, who led the Great War against Northern aggression.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the man is a racist.
Yep.
He was rejected for the court because he was quoted one time telling a white civil rights attorney that he was a disgrace to his race.
Yeah, for defending those, right, yeah.
And you know what? And he's upset about the Supreme Court years ago giving voting rights and civil rights to, African Americans. And he is just scared witless that someday the Supreme Court will sooner or later say, hey, you know, gays, they're Americans.
Right.
And
that's what I think that's the coded situation with Elena Kagan, which is they believe her to be a lesbian. They can't call her out because 86% of the populace think that regardless of how they feel about marriage, that gay people should have the equal rights to everyone else insofar as just lifestyle.
Right. And real quick, it's laughable that these guys are sitting there talking down her bona fides.
Right.
I mean, Solicitor General, head of Harvard Law School, top of her class, summa cum laude, all this other stuff. Yeah, I think she might have a little
qualifications. Absolutely. Thank you so much for the call. Excellent point, buddy. We've only got about a minute left in the show because when Rick is here, it races by. That's a large part of it. Rick is going to be in Dinner for Schmucks.
Dinner for Schmucks
Dinner
with
Steve Carell.
July 30th.
July 30th it comes out. You are always welcome here, sir. I might crowbar you into coming back in again this week.
You got a deal.
Because I think it would be really fun.
I can't wait.
Yeah. Tomorrow we will be back. There will be more that we'll be dealing with in this with Elena Kagan. But I don't want the BP element to slip into the background too much. Tomorrow, everybody, I don't want to get too Glenn Beck, but your homework, if you choose to accept it, is to really look into what the other oil companies are doing around the world. I've said this.
Yeah.
One of the reasons
why. This is a magic trick right now.
Yeah. Don't think for a second this is the only oil leak of importance in the world right now.
No, there's five other ones.
It's constant soiling. This idea that they're going to go, well, if we could do shallow water drilling, we'd do it. They dump dispersants into the waters around all of those things to keep you from seeing the fact that there would be pools of oil around every single rig in the Gulf.
We're pushing ourselves to extinction, trying to get a material made of the last big stupid animal that thought it owned the face
exactly.
of the planet.
Exactly. We're trying to burn those in it. Yeah.
We're the next oil.
Yeah, exactly. 1-800-STEP-12. Call us tomorrow. Get in there at 6 a.m. or, you know, in the first hour. I'd love to hear from you. This conversation will continue. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks. Big thanks to Tony and of course, Miranda today and the lovely and talented Christine Romans, who was with us. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Thanks a lot, Hal.
We will see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Love you, Steph.
Wait a minute.